Welcome to Backline Banter, episode 10. Today, we have got a good one in terms of content, but personally, not my favorite. As of course, as we always do, talk a lot about Liverpool, and sadly, on the weekend, they did lose to Man United in the FA Cup. But we will also be talking about the four Premier League games that were played, as most teams were playing in the FA Cup. A lot of games got postponed, so only the four. And also, we have a top 10 list. This one for the episode will be top 10 best current Premier League strikers at the moment. The big game. Man United versus Liverpool. It did end 4-3 after extra time. Now, my thoughts on the game was that Liverpool, like, we played not bad. It wasn't horrible. But what killed us was we just didn't take our chances in normal time. Like, so many chances. There was multiple times where it was like a 3-on-1, a 4-on-2, a 5v3 in our favour, yet we still wasn't able to hit the back of the net. So I thought we definitely should have won in normal time. But sadly, as we know, Antony with late minute equaliser to send it to overtime, and Man United do get the job in extra time, which fair enough, as they were the better team after the 90 minutes. The goal scorers for this game, we had McTominay scoring in the 10th minute, McAllister in the 44th, and Salah with the 45th plus 2 minutes in added time in the first half. So to give us a lead going into the halftime break, within 3 minutes getting the two goals to put ourselves back up, and deservedly, that's for sure. But like I said, Antony equalizes it in the 87th minute. Liverpool do strike first though in extra time with Harvey Elliott in the 105th minute, but Rashford replies in the 112th and Ahmed Diallo in the 120th minute to win it for Manchester United. So like I said, it is disappointing, that's for sure. Very, very disappointing result. Did I expect the game to be this hard? Of course I didn't, but in the 90 minutes of time, it was pretty cruisy for us, like especially that second half. We pretty much just tried to hold possession, you know, we went forward when we could, but wasn't really pushing for that third goal to seal it off, which we definitely should have been. And we got so many chances, like I've said, but we just didn't put them away. We didn't play the right pass to put us in when we had numbers in our favours, and just attacking wise going into Man United's third just wasn't up to the standard that we usually are and just wasn't good enough. But overall, we dictated the game. I thought it was pretty decent. But that's why it's so important to get another goal to seal the game off, because teams can get that boost in the last, you know, 5-10 minutes, because they know if we don't get a goal, we are going to get knocked out of the FA Cup. No matter what team it is, they're always going to push to the last minute. And that is exactly what happened. They found some spirit a bit out of nowhere and just, yeah, managed to get it, beat us an extra time. So I'll run you through the highlights for this game. Manchester United did start off well. Rashford did have a chance outside of the box shot. Kelleher saved it pretty comfortably though at the start of the game. And a bit later, McTominay scores in the 10th minute. Bit unlucky this one, but it happens, it does. Rashford just slipped the ball to Garnacho, who had a shot. Kelleher saved it, but so much power on the shot and just deflected into the path of McTominay, which he had an easy tap in to give him the lead early on. Although Man United could have made it 2-0. A little bit later on, Rashford once again plays a perfect cutback pass to McTominay, who's at the top of the box. Shoots first time, but it's straight at Kelleher. Good save by him. McTominay should do better, at least get it a little bit wider to force Kelleher making the save, but beautiful pass by Rashford. After Liverpool having some nice chances, Salah had one early on, just missed. Diaz had one. Good save by Onana. This time, Endo gets the ball, cut back to him in the box and slots it into the corner. But sadly, Mo Salah, the person who cut it back to him, was just offside. So no goal and still 1-0 to Man United. But we finally get our breakthrough in the 43rd minute. A beautiful run by Kwanzaa all the way from the halfway line, as of course he is a centre back. Dribbles past everyone, finds himself in the box, plays it to Nunez. Nunez plays it back to McAllister, who takes a touch and fires it near post to beat Onana. Did take a bit of a deflection to beat him, but deflection goals happen all the time and we will take that. With that momentum coming into the end of the first half, Nunez gets the ball on the left. He's inside the box, takes a beautiful shot at goal, but Onana just gets a hand to it, claws it out, but falls straight to Salah, unmarked, and is able to tap it in for an easy finish to put us 2-1 in front at halftime. And now, in the second half, Liverpool, so many chances, too many to talk about. And to be honest, I don't want to say too much more because it is annoying, that's for sure. But fair few chances and just couldn't make anything of it, couldn't hit the back of the net. So, like I said, end of the game, 87th minute. Antony gets the ball from Garnacho, takes a touch and just turns and somehow manages to find enough space to shoot, which he does. And he finds the corner, that's for sure, to put Man United level and send it to extra time. But before extra time does start, right near the end of the 90, about to blow the whistle, Rashford gets a beautiful chance. He's in the box, he's made a beautiful run, received the ball, one-on-one with Kelleher, tries to hit the corner but puts it wide, an opportunity where he should definitely score and win it for Man United in normal time. When I saw the chance, I couldn't believe he missed. I was so thankful he did though, because I was going to say, if we lose it in this fashion by not capitalizing on our chances and letting it slip late to Man United, whoa, oh, that would have been very, very painful. But luckily for us, Rashford lets us off the hook and a couple big chances for him in this game and just hasn't been able to capitalize. But the 105th minute, first goal for extra time, Harvey Elliott gets the ball from well outside the edge of the box and absolutely rockets it at goal, takes a deflection off the bottom of Eriksen's boot and finds the way into the back of the net. Bit lucky from us, but the amount of chances we have, you'd think one has to fall. And we give ourselves the lead in extra time. But Man United playing very well in all the extra time period. McTominay just slips a perfectly timed ball to Rashford, who doesn't make a mess of this one and puts it into the net, corners. Kelleher, no chance of saving it. Good composed finish by Rashford. You do expect him to score. And now it is 3-3. What a game it is, especially for the neutrals. But as we know, sadly, right near the end of the game, Liverpool have a corner kick. It's cleared out by McTominay. Harvey Elliott nearly gets on the end of it, tries to take a touchdown, but gets the ball taken off him. Falls to Garnacho, him running in, Bradley in front of him, Diallo to his left, plays in the ball, but it's not the greatest pass, that's for sure, but Diallo does well with it, takes one touch forward and then slots it right into the corner off the post. The only way he could have scored was into that corner there to beat Gallagher, to make sure Bradley didn't tackle him, and he did it. Fair play to him, and yeah, that's the game. Man United win 4-3, and it's difficult. It really is, because I want to be very enthusiastic, high energy for the podcast. But it was just sad losing, to be honest, especially in that fashion to Man United at Old Trafford. And yeah, just letting it slip. We really did. And now the quadruple is not even a possibility. So it's disappointing. Obviously, you know, you can't win every game, but to lose those ones is very disappointing. So, you know, that's why I'm not like, oh my gosh, Diallo scored the winner. Whoa, because I wish he didn't. And to be honest, I don't like to speak negatively about people, about players, but Diallo, I am not a fan one bit. I mean, of course I'm not. He scored the winner against us, but overall, his attitude, not a fan of it all. Multiple times, he got the ball taken off him and he thought it was a foul. Definitely wasn't. And he just puts his arms up in the air like, you know, referee, what's that? You know, how have I not gotten a foul there? When it's like, mate, it's clearly not a foul. Like, you've lost the ball. Get along with it. You know, don't just throw your arms up in the air just because you've lost the ball and you want to make it look, oh, no, it was a foul. You know, what is that? Or people making challenges and fouling it and he's gone, referee, throwing his hands up, yellow card, something like that. I just saw that and I thought, mate, stop it. There's no point. I understand doing it sometimes and when it is genuinely a pretty bad call and it's quite a close decision to be like, oh, that should be a yellow and he doesn't get a yellow, but it's every time and it's just like, come on, mate, that is poor mentality. Get along with it. In my opinion, he should be like, okay, cool. I've gotten this time to show what I can do. I'm going to do it, you know? I lost the ball there. It is what it is, you know, move on. But nah, he just carried on a bit, you know, throw the arms up in the air. Just not a fan I am, I'm not. And then he did manage to get a yellow card before he scored his goal in the game. I don't exactly remember this one. I think he fouled somebody and it wasn't the best foul, so he got a yellow for it. And then he goes and scores the winner, obviously, and then takes his shirt off to receive another yellow card, which obviously second yellow equals a red card, gets sent off and can't play in the semi-final. Like, I understand a massive, massive moment, you know? That is everyone's boyhood dream, scoring the last minute winner, especially against a rival team. But, you know, adrenaline is high and all that, and he might have forgot, you know, take the shirt off, just so, oh my gosh, but come on, mate. Like, there's just no need. And this might sound a bit strange, but I really don't understand players taking their shirt off, especially when they have an undershirt on as well. So he takes it off and he just hangs up his jersey like he's Messi. And it's just like, I just don't really agree with it. Like, I know it sounds strange, but you know, if you score a last minute winner and you haven't received a yellow already, fair play, mate. Do whatever you want. Take the shirt off. You know, show the abs. Whoa, I just scored a last minute winner. Look at me. But he was already on a yellow. And then he takes his shirt off, just holds it up in the air. And then obviously red card goes off the pitch. I just think it's really poor mentality by him and really just shows the Man United effect kind of thing. Because I've heard so many stories, and this is just from me, like listening to podcasts myself, like Ben Foster, listen to that one a lot, love it. And, you know, it just reminds me of all the stories, you know, how big it, upcoming talents for Man United, you know, they don't want to go out and loan spells to lower league clubs because, you know, they're living life in Manchester at their ground. You know, they don't have to do anything apart from play the game. You know, their kits get washed for them, you know, rady yada, all of that. You know, they're just living life really. Whereas they could be going out on loan, getting game time. Yes, they're not living as luxury as they would do up at Man U. But the most important part is game time, is your performance. I just think that really shows from Diallo there just how he just, you know, kind of thinks he's a king. And this could come across seem pretty harsh, but, you know, just looking at it with my morals, my thoughts on it, and kind of would I do the same in his situation? And obviously, I'm not a professional, so I don't know, but I just think it's a bit silly from him throwing his hands up in the air and then taking his shirt off for a second yellow. I just think that's not what you want at Manchester United, and it just puts a bit of a bad show to Man United's brand, in my opinion. Of course, it shows how their youth academy and the youngsters coming through, top quality, but it's just as important as being a good footballer as it is being a good person. So I just wanted to talk a bit on that. Yes, it might be a bit harsh, but that's my opinion. Of course, also, I'm a bit salty because he did score the last minute winner to beat us and to not let it go down to penalties. So do take that into account. But I just think, come on, do better, lad. But last thing on him, I was talking to a mate, man, new fan of mine, and he loves him. He's like, oh, what a king, you know, what a last minute goal, which is fair enough because you're a man, new fan. So that's just my thoughts on it. And of course, it's a podcast, lad. So that's what you're going to get, my opinion. I hope you listen to it. And hopefully, a lot of the time, you question it. You're like, I'm not too sure about that opinion, or I don't think that's how it went. Like, because hopefully, that means you're watching a lot more, you know, engaged. Anyway, that's the main things that I wanted to talk about the game anyway. Like I said at the start, I don't really want to spend too much time on this because it is quite disappointing and, yeah, bit painful to speak on the loss, but, you know, got to do it on the grind. Massive gain nonetheless. So I will talk about the subs for both teams. For Man United, in the 71st minute, Maguire and Antony came on for Wan-Bissaka and Hoyland. And I've got to be honest, Antony coming on, great idea. And he did play really well when he came on. A very bright spark, of course, getting the goal for Man U to put it into extra time. And good signs for him, to be honest. And yet, Maguire coming on, he was very solid at the back. In the 80th minute, Eriksen came on for Kobbie Mainoo. A good performance by Mainoo. But Ten Hag probably just thinking, bring on some fresh legs to get something out of the game. 85th minute, Ahmed Diallo did come on. And yeah, like I said, good performance by him. And in the 105th minute, their last sub they use, Mason Mount for Lindelof. So it was quite a crazy formation at the end of the game. They had Bruno as like a kind of center back. Like he just sat back and then was played and played the balls out. They went to a three at the back with Maguire. And then Antony dropped into like left center back role like Lindelof was doing. And then of course, yeah, Mount attacking, Ahmed Diallo attacking, Garnacho attacking, Rashford attacking, McTominay attacking. So they definitely threw the kitchen sink in, that's for sure. And it paid off for them. So yeah, you've got to say, bit of a masterclass from Ten Hag and good on him. For Liverpool subs, in the 72nd minute, Harvey Elliott came on for Szoboszlai. I thought Dom played a good game, he did. And it was good to see Harvey Elliott come on. Such a good sub off the bench. And of course, getting the goal for us. Connor Bradley in the 76th minute for Robertson. Of course, Robbo still, you could say, coming back from injury. So just rotating him up. Fresh legs. Bradley deserves to play some minutes. 77th minute, Gakpo on for Mo Salah. Again, Salah coming back from injury. Can't play a full game. So Gakpo on. And I will touch on Gakpo this game. I didn't think he played very well coming on. I thought he made some poor decisions. He was a bit greedy. And I feel like if Salah played the whole 90, then he would have got a goal to seal the game. Or made a goal. Or assisted. Or played a part in a goal for us. But sadly, we couldn't play him full game. Can't risk it. And just let him, you know, slowly come back into it. In the 101st minute, Tsimikas on for Gomez. Gomez, I thought he played another brilliant game. He was defensive midfielder at times, slot back into that fullback role. Very good by him. A lot of running, that's for sure. Then 114th minute, Bobby Clark on for Luis Diaz. So good subs by Klopp. I mean, we used as much as we could and, you know, had to take players off. Like I say, people still injured, so we don't have that massive squad depth as we usually do, which is why we just couldn't make anything happen in extra time. I did think maybe we could, especially because the game against Chelsea, Carabao Cup final this time, they just pulled something out of the bag. They got that energy and pushed through to win, but this game sadly just didn't happen. So good on Darwin Nunez, Endo, Van Dijk, Quansah, and McAllister for playing the full game. Obviously, Kelleher did too, but goalkeepers usually do. I thought it was good by Klopp to leave Darwin on because obviously wanting a goal and he can pull something out of nowhere. But I think as soon as it hit extra time, he was very, very flat. Not much energy in him. He didn't do a lot of running, which is fair enough because the whole 90, he was sprinting and it takes so much out of you running for balls and that. So it would have been nice to take him on and put someone like Jota on, but of course, injured. Endo and McAllister, so solid in that midfield. Absolute unit. And Van Dijk and Kwanzaa, also very solid at the back. So yeah, 4-3 loss. This now puts Man United, of course, in the semi-final against Coventry. And in the other semi-final, it's Manchester City versus Chelsea. So I'm going to swiftly move on. Very disappointing, but it is what it is, I guess. At least we are still on for the treble. So yeah, now you can laugh at me saying, I think we can win the quadruple and I think we're going to do it. Klopp's last season, da-da-da-da. Because yeah. That's not happening. But the treble, I do think we can still do that one. As long as we don't play like we did in this game. I am now going to run through the other three games in the FA Cup, all the other quarterfinals. So Wolves versus Coventry at home. Of course, you do think Wolves would get the job done, but that is not the case. Overall, to be honest, Coventry playing better, I thought. They had the better chances and definitely took it to Wolves at their ground. It ended 3-2 with Sims scoring in the 53rd minute, Ait Nouri in the 83rd, Bueno in the 88th. And at this point, you'd think, wow, Wolves have managed to pull it back right at the end of the game to win the game 2-1. Late minute goals for Nouri and Bueno. But no, extra time added on for injuries, for stoppages, whatever they could think of. Sims scores in the 97th minute. And you think, wow, Coventry very well to bring it back, to put it into extra time. But no, they do one better. And Wright scores in the 90th plus 10th minute to win the game for him 3-2. An absolute fantastic win for Coventry and genuinely something out of a story for Coventry. You would not believe it if you didn't see it. Two late minute goals for Coventry after Wolves scoring late on to put themselves in the lead and Coventry taking it back. So fair play to them. And like I said, they versed Man U in the semi-finals. Should be an interesting game because it is at Coventry's ground. But of course, you do expect Man United to win. But again, you'd expect Wolves to beat them. So you just never know. But I just hope Coventry push Man United and it ends up being a close game. If I got to choose one of them to win, I'd choose Coventry to win because, well, I don't have to explain myself. That's pretty self-explanatory. But what a run for Coventry in this FA Cup tournament and good luck to them. Another championship team, Leicester versus Chelsea at the Stamford Bridge. But sadly for them, they did not get the win and it ended 4-2 to Chelsea. Cucurella scored in the 13th minute. Palmer in the 45th minute. De Sassi scored an own goal in the 51st. Mavididi in the 62nd minute. And to win the game for Chelsea in stoppage time, Chukwuemeka in the 92nd minute and Madueke to add the cherry on the cake in the 98th minute. Again, another pretty hectic game, to be honest. But Chelsea managed to get the result they wanted, and deservedly so. 26 shots, 8 on target to 5 shots and 1 on target. So, wow, 1 shot on target for Leicester, and they managed to score their goal. And of course, De Sassi with the own goal doesn't count as a shot for Leicester, so that's why it only has 1. Chelsea should have put this game to bed a bit earlier. Of course, they score early on with Cucurella, but then Sterling has a penalty in the 26th minute, which he actually misses. But Palmer put Chelsea 2-0 before half time. Then Leicester get two goals back to put it 2-2. But sadly for Leicester, which probably gave them their downfall, was Callum Doyle got a red card in the 73rd minute. So puts Leicester to 10 men, and that's a big reason why Chelsea scored goals late on to put them through into the semi-final. A decent effort by Leicester, but Chelsea getting it done as they should. So they will versus Manchester City in the semi-final, as Man City did beat Newcastle 2-0 at home. Two goals by Bernardo Silva, and both of them being deflection goals. He scores his first in the 13th minute and the second in the 31st. They were the dominant team for the most part, I thought. 16 shots, 5 on target to Newcastle's 2 shots, 1 on target. But Newcastle doing all right, to be honest, especially recently. But they just wasn't able to find too much of an attacking threat, getting no goals and then 2 deflection goals by City. You do feel a bit bad for Newcastle, but you think if they don't get the deflection goals, they're getting it somewhere else. So Man City, like I said, moved to the semi-final against Chelsea, which of course you do expect them to win. So it could be another Manchester derby, just like last season in the final. So that is the FA Cup summary, you could say. Will you get another one? Probably not, because Liverpool's not in it anymore. But no, I reckon I will talk about the semi-finals and especially the final, because like I said, my prediction there, I reckon it'll be a Manchester derby and Man City will take it. So some big games coming up in that competition. Into the Premier League summary. Like I said in the intro, only the 4 games for this game week. So we'll hop into the first one, an absolute massive game, Luton versus Forest. It did end 1-1 though. Such a big game, as of course it was, and it still is because of the draw, 18th versus 17th. If Luton won, would have gave them a massive boost and would have been tied points with Forest and so close out of the relegation zone, but that does not happen. Into the chances, half an hour into the game, both sides having an attacking threat. Forest find themselves on the attack, a beautiful touch by Chris Wood to get the ball to Gibbs White. He plays a ball through that gets deflected into the path of Elanga. He lays it off to Origi in the box, takes a touch, fires it goal bound, beats the keeper. But what a goal line stop by Rhys Burke. Absolutely phenomenal from him. Like, wow. No doubt was that a goal preventing block / clearance, just phenomenal. He's running back to goals and manages to get the touch with his foot to take it away from the goal. Amazing defending. As a defender myself, that is beautiful to see. But a few minutes later, Gibbs White gets the ball in the box, crosses it perfectly to Chris Wood, who gets the finishing touch on it to put Forest 1-0 up. And for Chris Wood personally, it puts him into 10 goals this season in all competitions. None of those goals have come in the Premier League though. So you've got to say a pretty good campaign for him so far. Very unexpected, that's for sure. But good on him. Forest 1-0 up. But Luton think they've replied quickly with a chested then volleyed finish from Mengi. Luton had a corner and he buried it. But on the second look, he uses his hand / arm to touch it down and then get his volley away. So no goal, a handball. Elanga with a massive chance gets the ball running in on goal, pushes past Ogbene, takes a shot. Kaminski gets a bit of a touch on it. Not enough though, as it is still goal bound. But once again for Luton, a brilliant goal line clearance from Mengi. Just got there in time to kick it out. Very well done by him. Now the big moment for Luton. What they seem to do so often at the moment, score late goals to equalize a game, to get some points from it. Whatever it does, they do it. Barkley whips in a corner and Burke heads it down and Berry turns and volleys it into the net. A man who hasn't even played half an hour in the Premier League all season comes on and rescues a very, very important point for Luton. And another interesting fact for the person who scored, it's made him score in every league for Luton. So he scored in League 2 with Luton, League 1, the Championship, and now the Premier League. What an achievement and what a time to score your first Premier League goal in this massive relegation fixture that ends 1-1. So to be honest, I think both sides are a bit disappointed. Luton at home, you would think they'd get a result, but also Forest coming to Luton's ground, you'd think Forest might get a result as well. So a draw happens and fair enough. So it looks like it will be up to both the teams themselves versus other teams and see if they can pick up or keep dropping points. Burnley 2, Brentford 1. Wow, what a game and what a result. I honestly think one of the only games where I truly thought that one team would win. And I did think Brentford would have beat Burnley at home, but they don't manage to do so. And you've got to say, very, very well done by Kompany. Also, a big decision by him, which pretty much won him the game, to be honest. Vincent Kompany switched up the goalkeepers. He played Muric instead of Trafford, and wow, what a game by Muric. So 4 minutes in, Burnley have the ball. It gets played to Cullen in the middle, who picks a perfectly timed pass over the top to Vitinho, who takes a touch and just gets pushed in the back by Reguilon. A definite red card because of the position, and you just can't do that much contact in the box, especially from stopping him to score. And a massive factor for Brentford lose this game. They go down to 10 men, and of course, Burnley have a penalty, which Brun Larsen steps up to take the penalty and slots it to the left side, side netting, a massive start for Burnley. And realistically, couldn't have gone better for him. And being a defender myself, of course, and just a neutral fan, you've got to think, was that red card by Reguilon worth it? Because, of course, it was a red, the challenge horrendous, but should he have just, you know, not pushed him in the back and not letting him score, because Vitinho was already scoring, but not stopping him from scoring and not getting a red card? Because end of the day, Burnley still got a penalty from it and they scored from it. And now Brentford, for the rest of the games, 80 minutes left in the game and however much stoppage time there is, are down to 10 men, 10 v 11 at Burnley's ground. You've just got to ask the question, is it worth it? Now, personally, this early on in the game, I don't think it's worth it, really. I think the only thing that would make it worth it and what Reguilon probably thought was, well, it's a definite goal, that's for sure. So if I foul him, they have a penalty and it's not as definite if Burnley are going to score the pen compared to the chance. A bit like Luis Suarez versus Ecuador in the World Cup. You know, handball it off the line because it was going to be a goal, which giving them a penalty, which they ended up missing. But that was late on in the game, where this one is 10 minutes in. It's just another Premier League game. Was 0-0 at the time. He could have just left him. They score. It is what it is. Burnley up 1-0, but it's still an 11-11 game. And in my opinion, Brentford would have a lot better chance to come back into the game. And I would have thought they would have come back to win the game. But with 10 men, of course, you don't expect that. And it didn't happen. So, you know, just a question you got to ask, you know, just think to yourselves, well, do you agree with that? Do you think he should have still fouled him, got a red, gave him a penalty, which they scored from anyway, or just let him score, he doesn't get a red and he gets to play on. And also, he's going to miss the next game. I don't know if it's three games or two, however many it is. I don't know if it's worth it. Anyway, though, Brentford with 10 men, they're still trying to press hard, which they do in this chance. Jensen puts pressure on Oshie, who passes it back towards goal, doesn't know where the keeper Muric is, and he thinks he's just behind him in the goals, but no, Muric went a bit wider to receive the ball from him, but Oshie passes it back to the goal. Muric has to full-on sprint to stop the ball going into the back of the net, and when I say if he was a millisecond late from clearing the ball off the line, I mean it, because genuinely, 1 millisecond late, the whole ball would have crossed the line, where he managed to get a beautiful clearance, a beautiful goal line clearance to stop it fully passing the line. And so far, a lot of goal line clearances in these games and some massive ones too. Of course, Burke and Mengi in the Luton Forest game, now Muric Burnley Brentford game. But with Muric's clearance off the line, it goes straight to Ivan Toney, who takes a touch in the box, has a shot, but Muric, once again, a beautiful save. It was going straight for the corner, but deflects it off goal, goes wide. What a save by him. A very good couple minutes for the keeper stepping in for Trafford. And he keeps the 1-0 lead for Burnley. In the second half now, 61st minute, Burnley extend their 1-0 lead and make it 2. They're playing beautifully against Brentford. Of course, they do have an extra man, but nonetheless, putting in a good performance. And Odebert just slips a beautiful pass to Fofana, which he does just a nice little shot just to get it over the keeper's leg and into the net and put Burnley 2-0 up at home. With the extra man, you just don't see Brentford coming back. And of course, we know the result, they don't. But in the 83rd minute, Baptiste whipped in a cross and straight onto the head of Aya and heads it home to give Burnley just a little bit of hope and makes it 2-1. But no more goals left in the game. So Burnley get a much needed 3 points, and now they're only 5 points behind Luton in 19th. So slowly climbing their way up and seeming it just that little bit more possible for their survival. Like I said, good performance by Burnley, but was against 10 men nonetheless, but you can't take that away from them. Disappointing for Brentford, that's for sure. I reckon they were definitely expecting to get all 3 points from this game, but it does not end up going that way for them. Oh, well, technical difficulties do happen, and that is what happened for me. What I thought I have just done is finished the last two Premier League games to talk about, but I forgot to turn the mic on. So, it happens, and for the second time for me, but for the first time for you, so I'll try and be just as energetic, but I have already said all this, but Fulham 3, Spurs 0. Wow, what a result. You just do not expect that at all. I did think, of course, it would be a bit of a close game, but Fulham to win 3 to Spurs is nothing. I would not have betted on that, that's for sure. In the 23rd minute, Robertson has a spectacular run. It started below the halfway line and went all the way into the opponent's box. He dribbled past a player, cut it back, and Muniz misses the ball with his flick. So close to put that finishing touch on it, but just goes past him. Then Spurs go on the counter-attack. Madison in the box, plays it back to Son, and he just puts it over the bar. Beautiful technique, and you've seen him do it so much this season. He opens his body up, sides foots it. So good technique, so much power on it, but just blazed over the bar. But in the 41st minute, the man in form, Rodrigo Muniz, scores to give Fulham the lead. Robinson, once again on the left, plays a beauty of a cross in the box to Muniz, who takes a touch to put him in for the shot second time and absolutely finishes it. Exactly what you expect from him now in his form. What a player at the moment. And it will be very interesting to see if he can keep this up. Start of the second half, Fulham extend their lead. Castagna does an overlapping run, which he gets played the ball by Willian, whips it in, and Lukic, what a bit of skill slash luck, just gets a beautiful touch on it with his quad just to guide it into the far post, absolutely flying past Vicario. He's got no chance. But because Castagne whipped it in so much power, Lukic only needed that slight touch to guide it on goal to give Fulham the 2-0 lead. For Fulham's third goal in the 60th minute, Andreas Pereira takes a corner and is placed on Palinha's head, which he just headers down to Bassi, who turns and fires it into the post. But luckily for Fulham, it bounces off the post into the middle of the 6-yard box, and Muniz once again gets the final touch on it to send it home for Fulham's third. And you've got to say, at that point there, Spurs not able to come back. Fulham actually put the ball into the back of the net for a fourth time, but Raul Jimenez is offside and he blocks the goalie's view in his offside position, so it stays at 3-0. So with that 3 points, Fulham have just won. They move into 12th place now. And they are only 4 points off 8th place, which is Brighton. So like I said in the last episode, that mid-table is so close at the moment. Every position higher is so big for the clubs. You get more money, and you got to say, if Fulham can keep this going, you could possibly see them get into the top half of the table. And honestly, it's not too far of a stretch, but maybe they could get into that 7th spot for European football. Just maybe, because you never do know. Bit unlikely, but if they keep playing like they have when they turn up on the day and just keep doing it, especially on those days where they're not at it, either at home or away, that's definitely not the worst prediction. For Tottenham, though, sadly for them, they do stay in 5th place. They were looking to get on tied points with Aston Villa, but getting no points from the game and getting quite dominated, to be honest. Of course, they did have their chances, but no clear-cut ones, really. But they do still have a game in hand compared to Villa, so say they win that one, they will be tied points, and depending on how many goals they do score in their next game, which hopefully, as I said, they get the win, they could go above Villa. But overall, a disappointing result for Spurs and a good result for Fulham. West Ham 1, Aston Villa 1. Another pretty big game. Two top table teams. Villa, of course, like I said, in 4th and West Ham in 7th. So you always thought it would be a pretty close game, especially at West Ham's home ground. And to be honest, with all the chance given, you've got to say West Ham a bit unlucky not to get the 3 points. In the 28th minute, West Ham break the deadlock, and thanks to a cross by Koufal and a diving headed finish by Mikel Antonio, they give West Ham the lead. And it is good to see Antonio back on the score sheet. It's actually his first Premier League goal since the first month of the season. And of course, he has been injured, but also just unable to put the ball in the back of the net. So you love to see it, because I'm a big fan of him and Callum Wilson. Like I've mentioned before, listen to their podcast. Absolutely love it. Beautiful insight and just top blokes. And it's good to see such a West Ham legend, you could say, back on the score sheet. And he adds on to his goal at the start of the second half. Bowen whips in a corner and Antonio chests the ball home. But VAR has a look at it and deems it as a handball, as it led straight to the goal. It just had a slight touch, just a little brush of the arm. It was going in anyway if it didn't brush his arm, but I suppose because VAR looked at it and said that it was directly to the goal, it's handball. But in my opinion, I think that's a bit harsh. His hand was in a natural position, like I said, going in anyway. So, bit disappointing for West Ham and Antonio, but good signs for West Ham starting off well in the second half. But in the 78th minute, Zaniolo, the man off the bench, scores to equalise it for Villa. Diaby, another man off the bench, gets the ball in over the top and beats his man to play a cut back pass into the space for Zaniolo to run onto and tap it in between Areola's legs into the goal to make it 1-1. Villa not having as many chances as you would think, but the reason why they're so high in this Premier League table this season, playing really well and taking their chances. But there is late drama. West Ham put the ball into the back of the net by Souček, but it's ruled out for another handball. This one, unlike the first goal, was very difficult to see because there was so many bodies in the way of the ball and the goal line because it was very much, will it cross the line? Will it not? Will it get cleared out? But it ends up in the back of the net. But just like Antonio's goal, VAR has a look at it and it's deemed as handball or a foul. I'm not too sure, but when I was watching it back, the referee did point to his arm. So it would suggest that either Souček or Bowen handballed it in. Very difficult to tell, but in this case, I would say it's probably the right decision. The first one, I didn't really agree with, but this one, fair enough. So sadly for West Ham, unable to take all 3 points. The points are split, Villa with one, and the points are split one each. So, as you know, West Ham sitting pretty nice in seventh place. I'd say this is probably where they wanted and expected, because of course, last season, very disappointing from them, but they did end up winning the Europa Conference League, so some positives and minuses in that season. Whereas this one, it looks like they are back to their usual selves, fighting for that European position. And so far, so good. So we'll see if they can keep holding on to that near the end of the Premier League. For Villa though, again, as I've mentioned, they get let off the hook. Tottenham don't pick up any points in that Fulham game, so they still maintain their fourth position. And again, this Premier League finish is going to be entertaining. You've got the relegation battle, mid-table battle, the fourth, fifth European spot, and of course, who is going to win the whole thing. So I'd say for both teams, they hope they can bounce back from a disappointing result from both parties and keep pushing to the end of the season. And that is all the Premier League games wrapped up. Of course, just the 4 games this week with all the FA Cup rounds being played. And you've got to say, not the most exciting one, to be honest. Not a lot of goals. Results going in very different ways. But the Easter fixtures should be a banger. The key fixtures next week, we've got Newcastle versus West Ham, Aston Villa versus Wolves, Liverpool versus Brighton, and City versus Arsenal. So good to see some big games coming back. And if I was to give a quick score prediction on those games, I'd say West Ham will go and win at Newcastle. Villa beat Wolves at home. Liverpool, of course, beat Brighton. And fingers crossed, Manchester City beat Arsenal, or a draw would be very nice. But I do predict a City win in that game, to be honest. I know Arsenal been playing very well, so has City, but at home, and they know they need to win this game. I feel like they'll get the job done. De Bruyne, Haaland, Foden. I reckon Pep Guardiola will get them working at full capacity for the blockbuster game. Into the top 10 Premier League strikers this season. So before I get into the top 10 list, I have got some honorable mentions I just like to quickly mention and, you know, give a little reason why I didn't necessarily put them in. So Muniz recently been on fire. 7 goals in 7 games for him. Absolutely ripping it up for Fulham. But like it is this season, it's just not enough to put him into this list. If he continues this for the rest of the season, he definitely would put himself in the top 10. But for now, just not enough. João Pedro, I thought, deserves a mention. 8 goals, 2 assists in 12 Premier League games started. He's played 23 games all up, but of course, off the bench, you don't get as many minutes. So for Brighton, I thought he's been playing really well. Sadly, is injured at the moment and has been injured for at least a month now. So hopefully he comes back firing again for them. I do like him. Very good deal by Brighton to get him into the club. And yeah, nah, he has been very, very good. A little mention to Mateta as well. I thought he's been all right this season. That's why, of course, he's not in my top 10 list. But for Palace, 5 goals, 4 assists. It's not the worst, but, you know, of course, you've got to kind of take into account to the team that they do play for. And Palace this season, respectfully, not the best one for him. And I thought Mateta, for what he's been given and what Palace as a whole has been dealt with, especially the big attacking injuries, I thought he's done pretty well. Ivan Toney. Now, somebody who definitely would have gotten into this list if he wasn't banned for majority of the season because, of course, his betting. But coming back to the Premier League, he has been unreal. Again, another person where you've got to take into a little bit of consideration for the team they play for. Brentford, of course, not having as many aerial attacking threats as the bigger teams like Liverpool, City, Arsenal. And yeah, definitely would be in the list, but him missing so many games due to his ban does not make it. As much as I hate to say it, this player, Rasmus Højlund, he has been in pretty good form at the moment. Just like Muniz in the Premier League, he is on 7 goals. He's also got 2 assists. Like I said, recently been very good, but also another player who did get injured quite recently. He came back in the game against Liverpool in the FA Cup that we spoke on. And he did have a bit of a slow start in the Premier League. He was doing well in the Champions League, but when it came to the Prem, he just couldn't finish his chances. But in his past few games, he has put the ball in the back of the net a fair few times. So you could say if he continues it, would have made the top 10 list at the end of the season. But for now, just not enough. And the last mention, I think, just deserves a bit of a talking point, this one really. Cody Gakpo. Now, he has only gotten 5 goals, 3 assists, but he's only started 12 games. And he is decent. As of recent, his performances have been a bit questionable. But the talent is there. And of course, such a hard forward line to break into. I think he's done well when he's gotten his chances. Like I said, though, lately, he's been a bit questionable. But of course, a Liverpool fan, I just wanted to speak a little bit on him. He was pretty much primarily a winger at PSV before he joined Liverpool. But most times for the Netherlands, plays up front, and for Liverpool, usually gets subbed on up top because he is just very tall. And I don't know, coming to the Premier League, he just out on that wide position hasn't looked that good. But when he's moved up front in that striker role, a lot better. So that is all my honourable mentions that I think have kind of just missed the list or I thought they would have made the list unless da-da-da-da. In number 10 spot, I have Richarlison. Now, before I talk about, you know, his stats, how I think he's played, I do understand this season he has kind of been more of like a right winger, a bit more out of the wide as Son has played that number 9 position for Spurs. But Son, when he went to the AFCON, and for some reason I think he's had an injury, but I'm not too sure about that, he's slotted into that number 9 position and done really well. This season, 10 goals, 3 assists, 23 games, 17 started, so pretty good stats for him, especially last season. Not living up to expectations, but this season shown a bit more why they paid so much money from Everton to get him at Spurs. And to be honest, I think number 10 is pretty deserved. I think the only player on the list where I did kind of go, yeah, should he be on it? But I couldn't really find or think of any player that deserved to go above him. In the honourable mentions, none of them better this season than Richarlison. So a deserved 10th spot for him. In 9th spot, we have Alexander Isak. Now, sadly for him, he has been injured a lot this season. He still managed to play 20 games, but just not as many as you'd think. But the reason he is on this list in the 20 games he has played, he started 17 and bagged 12 goals. So when he has been on the pitch, he has been phenomenal for Newcastle. But sadly, injuries, and at the moment too, Newcastle not playing too well, so he's not getting a lot of chances. But when he gets them, he takes it, just like every player on this list. So I thought 9th spot is pretty fair above Richarlison. I definitely reckon he will continue scoring for the rest of the season. Of course, for Newcastle, Callum Wilson still out. Not too sure when he returns, but hopefully it is soon for them. And to be honest, I do like Isak. I think he's a really good player, big bowler, very tall and lanky, but his dribbling is very, very good. In 8th spot, we have Julian Alvarez. Now, another player where you could argue, is he a number 9 at City? And last season, I think, yeah, you could argue that. But this season, with Haaland having his injury and being out for a fair few games, Alvarez has slotted straight in to that number 9 spot and done really well, to be honest. 8 goals, 8 assists in 28 matches, and he starts 26 of them. So a regular starter for City, and that is very impressive by the 24-year-old. But to be honest, you would think those stats be a bit higher, but of course, it's not all about the stats. He's usually always involved in that attacking play that leads to the goal. So a top bowler he is. And recently, he hasn't scored a lot of goals, but of course, Haaland being back, he gets moved out to that left wing role, or even he's played into that in that center mid role with De Bruyne. But like I said, this season, primarily a striker with Haaland being out and doing very well. In 7th spot, and somebody who I think definitely could be higher in the list if it wasn't for his injuries, Diogo Jota. Absolute, what a player he is. Now, he can play across the whole front three, but I feel like mainly for Liverpool, he does slot into that number 9 and then, you know, Nunez out on the left when he has played, but sadly, it just hasn't been that often this season in the Premier League, as only 19 games, 13 started, but 9 goals and 3 assists from that. So that just shows absolute top quality when he's able to play, but had an injury before and now he's gotten another one. He's expected to turn about mid-April, so he will be back before the end of the season and be able to play a fair few more games, which will be a massive boost for Liverpool because, like I said, such a good player, played not as many games as we'd like, but still quality, and that's why he deserves the 7th spot. Honestly, I think he's very underrated, and if it wasn't for his injuries, he very well possibly could have been pushing Diaz and Nunez for their spots. Either he takes Diaz's spot, then Nunez out on the left, Salah on the right, obviously, but it's good competition for the attackers, and I think that's why they've done so well this season. 5 Liverpool attackers getting 10 plus goals this season. So well-deserved 7th spot. Is there a little bit of bias in that? I don't really think so, to be honest. I think above Alvarez, fair. Isak, yep. Richarlison, yep. Only questionable one possibly is Alvarez, but nah, I reckon Jota quality and not far off goal contributions than Alvarez and played fair fewer games. In 6th spot, the only player where I would say that is not really primarily a striker this season. Jared Bowen, of course, traditionally as that right winger, but with players like Antonio getting injured very often this season, he's been pushed up to that number nine role. And to be quite honest, when he's in that number nine role, I feel he doesn't do as good as he usually does out wide. Now, of course, that is because, you know, he doesn't get the ball as often and it's harder to turn and dribble at players when you're in the middle. But I thought, because he's played so much in that position this season, he's got to be mentioned in this list. And when I do the wingers at some point, he'll be in there as well. But always good to see a versatile player. And he's on track to have his best season for West Ham's in terms of goals. He's gotten 14 goals in the Premier League at the moment, 3 assists in 28 games played and started. So top quality for West Ham. And even with the introduction of Kudos, he's still been shining. And to be honest, helps him even more in terms of assists when you've got another big dribbling threat in Kudos. In fifth position, I have Son. Like I said before, Richarlison in 10, because of course has had to slot into that number 9 role when Son has been out. But of course this season, with Harry Kane leaving at the start of the season, he slotted into that striker role for Spurs, and you've got to say, he has smashed it up there for him. 14 goals, 8 assists, and 25 games played and 24 started. So another good season by him, and you just see him keep on adding to his total. And he just seems a perfect fit for Spurs with their new look, of course, Ange Postecoglou coming in before the start of the season. And of course, Son, so versatile, both footed. He just converted this season so well into that number 9 instead of out wide how he usually is on the left. And yeah, big, big bowler. So well-deserved fifth spot. At number 4, we have Dominic Solanke, a man who has had an unreal season for Bournemouth. 15 goals, 3 assists in 28 games played and started. Bournemouth needed that big man up front to get him the goals, and he has done exactly that. Just what a player he is, such an aerial threat. And to get this many goals in a side like Bournemouth, phenomenal by him. I don't see him leaving Bournemouth, but he definitely could go to a big top 6 team and rip it up even more over there. But yeah, so deserved for Dominic Solanke. Love to see him doing well. Big fan of him. And so clinical for the most part anyway. And just misses out in that podium spot. Now, in number 3, you might question this one a little bit, to be honest. I've got Erling Haaland. And now, you can probably work who I've got in the last 2 spots above him, and you might agree, you might disagree, but of course, he is the top goal scorer at the moment with 18 goals. He's also got 5 assists in 22 games started and 23 played. So he has managed to get 1 goal contribution each game. But I just think, you know, taking in account the amount of chances he has, and of course he has been out for a fair bit of the season with an injury, I just believe the people I've put above him deserve it. And one might be a little bit biased, but it's my list and I think that is pretty fair. Now, of course, what a player, and I think he should have won the last Ballon d'Or, got robbed by Messi. But it's such quality, and again, shows how he can do it this season. And yeah, last season, wow. To come in his first Premier League season and break the record and add on to it, crazy. But this season, I think a 3rd spot is deserved for him. In number 2 spot, I have got Darwin Nunez. And hear me out here, hear me out. 10 goals, 7 assists, 17 games started, 26 played. So just like Haaland, he's gotten a goal contribution in every game he's started. And I just think he is a lot more influential in that number 9 role. Haaland, a fair few games this season, especially the big ones, he just goes missing. Prime example, the Liverpool v City game, where Nunez is always in the game. Yes, he does miss a lot more chances than Haaland, and especially some big ones. But overall, his threat on the game is much larger. And this season, and especially as of recent, Nunez in fire form, scored a lot more goals in other competitions. But of course, this is just the current Premier League strikers of this season. So, of course, a bit of biased, and he is one of my favourite players at the moment, of course. But I do think he deserves the second spot. Very controversial, I know, but that is my opinion. And to be honest, I really wanted to put him in number one spot, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it because in number one spot, Ollie Watkins. He has been absolutely phenomenal this season. Like, just hear these stats for Aston Villa. 16 goals, 10 assists in 29 games started and played. That is unreal. The form he has been in this season, unbelievable. He's just so clinical because Villa, sometimes they do have a lot of chances, but others, they struggle to make it. And this season, just he's been so clinical and really stepped up his game compared to previous seasons. And yeah, those stats do not lie. And of course, again, not just the stats, but his play in general. He gets way more involved than Haaland does. Not as much as Nunez, but his final product is insane. Because of course, the 16 goals and even his final passing as well. 10 assists. That is crazy. Well, they're more goal contributions than Mo Salah this season. And you know, he's a right winger, a massive goal scorer and a massive assister. And yeah, with those stats, he's got most goals and assists combined this season. Playing for Aston Villa, of course, they are in fourth and have played very well this season, but that is just unreal. Nobody would have expected that this season. And for me, he does deserve the best Premier League striker this season so far. So quickly run through the whole list again. Number 10, Richarlison. 9, Isaac. 8, Alvarez. 7, Jota. 6, Bowen. 5, Son. 4, Solanke. 3, Haaland. 2, Nunez. And number 1, Ollie Watkins. So definitely some controversial opinions there, but I think it is pretty justified and I think it is fair enough. That does wrap us up for the episode. Thank you for listening, and it will be very much appreciated if you could do anything to help the podcast out. Follow me, give me some feedback, whatever you can do would be appreciated. And I'm not too sure what the next episode will be because, of course, there is a little bit of an international break just about 1 week before Easter. So I do have a bit of a plan. It would be massive, but I don't know if I'll be able to pull it off in time. And of course, I do have school. So finding time to do these pods are a little bit difficult. But like I said, hope you enjoyed. Thanks for listening and see you later.